When you decide who it is that you're called to be and
Mm-hmm.
you live that out every single day, that is your purpose. My purpose isn't being a dad and being a husband and being a follower of Jesus and being a business leader and being a CEO and being a COO and being a communicator and being a wrestling coach. It's in everything that I do.
Cody Jefferson, welcome to the Beyond the Norm podcast, man. Appreciate you jumping on here.
Man, it's good to be here. It's good to be here.
I have to give some disclosure. I am part of the roundtable, so I feel like I have a little extra privilege here, maybe. I don't know, but maybe some extra access. But I can't speak highly enough to that, so anybody listening, Embrace the Lion roundtable, Cody Jefferson's group. It's been amazing. Can't speak highly enough to Cody and the other guys in the group. It's been a great game changer for me in my life. So,
man, I'd love to hear that. Thank
yeah,
you. Man.
And yeah, we talk biz, health, mind, faith, family. I mean, really everything. So that's another thing that I love about it is you hit all aspects of life. And I believe, yeah, I joined it mainly. You know, I vibed with you, but I'm on this entrepreneurial journey myself, but I believe that journey is a holistic journey. It's not just, it's not just money making or business. I mean, it incorporates the kids, the family, everything else. So,
sure.
So yeah. And excuse me, with that, we've kind of made a little transition. You've been open about it, like a little more of a faith aspect to it. And I kind of wanted to start. Why don't you just talk a little bit about that? Maybe what sparked that shift, or not that it's a shift, because we talked about faith and things like that before. But what's kind of been that little tweak there towards heading that direction, specifically inside the group and mainly some of your social stuff?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was a pastor for 13 years before I stepped into the business world. And, you know, so much of that journey, I normalized and assumed that everyone had the same acumen from like a biblical literacy standpoint and what it meant to walk out faith on a daily basis. What I quickly came to realize through traveling and speaking, being in front of you know, quite a few people at any given time, was the majority of questions that I would get had nothing to do with business. It doesn't matter that I'm involved in a handful of companies. It doesn't matter that we've been able to do some big things in the business world, relatively. Everything came back to, I think, the identity of me having been a pastor, so being kind of a safe place for people to ask questions and to process. You know, when I travel and speak, I usually travel with a videographer. And it was not too terribly long ago, maybe 6 months ago, we were at an event, and I've been doing this for 20 years now. And I had, again, normalized things that weren't necessarily normal. He pulled me aside. He's like, "Do you recognize that every time you go speak, you have a line of people for like 6 hours and you just sit here and talk to people?" I'm like, "Well, yeah." I was like, in my head, I'm like, "Well, that's what pastors do." Yeah. I happen to be in the business world, and I'm a business consultant, and I own a few companies myself. Sit on the board of a few others. But so much of what people want to interact with is faith based and spiritually led. And so I just don't ever think about it. He's like, "Dude, look around. Like, that doesn't happen with anyone else." I'm like, "Well, I guess I had never really thought of that. That's very interesting." And so the conversation then was, what if we just started documenting some of these conversations and throwing them online and seeing people resonate? And clearly people have. A lot of the videos are, you know, over 1 million views, and which is absolutely insane to me for something that, it's interesting when you get into the business world, you think everyone wants business insight. But really, you can Google and YouTube just about everything and anything that you would want to know. But when it comes down to understanding or finding the grace inside of things that happen, understanding what it means to live out faith with a family when the songs that you used to sing as a kid on Sunday don't really make sense anymore, and a little bit of life has happened, and it's not as cookie cutter and as Christianese as you might have thought it was. And so you get a little cynicism in there as well. And so you experience loss, and you experience trial, and you experience frustration and pain and self-sabotage and apathy and depression and anxiety. It's like, okay, well, you seem like me, like you seem like a pretty well-rounded guy, and you clearly seem to have some peace about you. What is that about? And so Roundtable has evolved. We certainly still talk business, and we still, you know, have our fitness stuff, and we still do all of those things. But the main crux of the group is like, can you help us lead our families more effectively? Like, pretty much got the business on lock. I know what to do. This is a natural progression of things. I'm acquiring more properties, or I'm building more teams, or I'm, you know, creating new structure over here. And it's giving me more bandwidth and margin with my family. How do you lead yours? And so that's what's pushed us into it, is just conversations with the guys, conversations that I'm having in real time, and recognizing that even online, in 30 to 60 seconds at a time, people are reaching a point where they don't want to be talked at. They just want to be talked to and talked with.
Yeah. Well, dude, that's awesome. That's awesome. It's amazing. Yeah. You forget that, you know, if you come from any kind of the church world, you forget the, like you were saying, that not everybody has that. And there's a hunger for it, or there's at least a curiosity for it.
Yeah.
It's something I forget as well. And how, you know, for us, guys like us who come from that world, it's kind of, it's always been tied together. So it's, you know, we don't think about it as much until you get exposed to people who haven't, or like you said, experience loss, or, you know, something's tripped them up in their path to where they've rethought things or came to. So, so speaking to that, you know, changing the vibe to leading your families and things like that, that we do, something you talk a lot about is setting the standard in every area of your life. I love this. It's kind of helped me build that foundation of that as well, being in the group. But can you speak to that a little bit? Like, what's that, setting the standard in every area of your life? I know the thing that made it tick for me is you said your kids are watching. So that was a big part of the reason it ticked for me, but just maybe speak to a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, that's the whole thing, right? So for majority of the guys that I walk with, and you know, we've got a community of over 4,000 men around the world, and majority of them are parents and their dads, and our kids are watching. And more than what it is that we say, they're watching what we do. And at some point in time, they're going to reach a threshold of maturity where they're going to figure us out. And my dad either did the things that he was trying to tell me to do, or he didn't.
Yeah.
And so for me, like, every day we're setting a standard, whether it's the one that you want to set or the one that you would like to set or not, it's a standard. And so it's either going to be the ceiling that your kids always butt up against, or it's going to be a new floor for them to ascend from. Mm-hmm. So for me, I just look at every area of my life. Now, do I get it 100% every single day? Nope. There's like one guy who did, and we named our faith after him. we got one dude who got it right the whole time.
Yep.
But if we look at every area, so physically, financially, emotionally, relationally, spiritually, if we look across our life and we say, okay, who am I? Who do I say that I am? And then couple that against, like, who does God say that I am? Like, I am a man of faith. I make no apologies for that. It's very front-facing for me. I like to say I'm a little bit country, I'm a little bit rock and roll, and I'm a whole lot of Jesus. And so what is the standard? So physically, if I have an able body, if I'm healthy, why would I not set the standard of being an athlete? Because if I'm an athlete, then I train every day. I eat certain foods every day. I don't partake in other things because they just don't serve me. Surround myself with people who understand the standard that I'm setting and are good with that, right? So that's gonna keep me out of certain places that would be detrimental to upholding that standard. And it's also going to pull me into rooms where that standard is normal. And so, okay, if I'm an athlete, then this is who I am. This is what I do. if I set the standard of being a loving, present, healthy father, we'll first have to define what that is, because for many of us, we have some really great things that our parents instilled in us, and then we have some things that we'd like to do differently. And if we're not careful, if we don't transform some of that trauma that happened when we were kids, and I'm not saying it has to be all bad and like dire straits, but it's all trauma because it all informs us and it all creates new patterns for us. If we don't transform that, we'll just continue transmitting it to our kids, because that's the standard that's on autopilot. So we have to do the work of saying, well, who do I want to be as a dad? Okay. And if that's who I want to be, well, then what does that dad do? And so we put those habit structures in place every single day. And then we have to have the awareness to catch ourselves when, like, shoot, I flew off the handle. What could I have done differently? How could I have responded differently? I think I kind of blew my kid off. I think he was really excited, or she was really excited about something. I think I was a little distracted. How could I be more present? Also, if I'm setting the standard as a CEO or an owner inside of my company, then what are my responsibilities? And in order for us to do the things that we believe God has called us to do, well, then what kind of infrastructure is needed? What kind of team is needed? What kind of systems and processes are needed? What kind of accountability and KPIs and OKRs are required? And if you don't know, well, then now we understand, well, then this is who we have to become. In order to create the margin, and in order to create the not only the awareness, but also the aptitude to be able to handle that kind of growth, well, that's going to require a different person than the one that's currently sitting in the mirror. Yeah. So, okay, well, if that's the standard that I'm setting, well, then these are the things that I do. And if I don't know, then I'm going to join a community, a mastermind. I'm going to receive coaching, mentorship. I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to read some books. I'm going to check the internet. Like, I'm going to figure out how to close that gap.
Yeah.
Because if this is who I am, this is what I do. If I'm a loving, present husband, well, then I have to define, well, then what does that actually mean?
Mm.
Because for many of us, we may have not seen that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I grew up from a divorced home. I've been divorced and recognized that, like, okay, well, we got a pattern here. And the only way that I'm going to break the pattern is if I really do some deep internal work to recognize what inside of me needs to die to become the man that I said that I would be.
Love it.
So creating new habits, new infrastructure, new ways in which to give and receive love, recognizing that love can be safe. Mm. Because when things feel like a threat for so long, and instability becomes the new normal, because if you were like me and you grew up in some instability as a kid, you normalize that. And so then, like, a regulated nervous system is a threat. Somebody who just loves you, that's a threat because you're not seeing it.
Yeah.
So we have to redefine things and set a new standard so that, again, we don't transmit that trauma to our kids. We transform it, that pain, into power. And now we give them a new threshold, a new benchmark, a new floor to start from.
Yeah. I love it, man. That I was going to hit on that. This is who I am. So this is what I do. That's become a mantra of mine. I mean, it's something, it seems common sense. But when, like, I would say I was fairly successful, have a decent, you know, decent marriage, decent relationship with my kids. But when you really think about every decision or, the decisions you're going to make, this is who I say I am. So this is what I do. It sets that standard. And that's right. Actually one of the big things that, I've taken away, and kind of learn from you and the importance of, in the group, the importance of stacking wins. And this is something that I was missing before joining, but stacking wins, I wrote it down, putting deposits into the self-credibility bank. Yeah. And that's a huge thing that's helped me, like, stay, because I was the guy who would, I'd hit the gym for 3 months, then I'd fall back off. And then I'd hit the gym, fall back off. I'd be real motivated and do this with business, then I'd get lackadaisical. And it's because I wasn't doing what I said I was supposed to do. Well, and so
that's the whole frame of confidence, right? So we build confidence by keeping our word to ourselves, and we need to understand what that word is. So we have to define clearly who it is that we're called to become, and what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. What are the boundaries around this? Because if this is who I am, so this is what I do, I also don't do certain things. Mm-hmm. And it's a non-negotiable. It's not the water's kind of muddy and maybe I'm out of town and nobody will know. I mean, integrity is always doing the right thing, even when no one is watching. It's something that we're like really teaching our kids right now as they experience a little bit more independence, the older that they get, is that, listen, if, especially in sports and academics for them right now, if you're consistently looking for me to be proud of you, then you're going to equate my pride in you based on whether you win or lose. I'm proud of you for being you. I'm proud of you for showing up. I want you to set the standard. 1 to 10, how do you feel like you did? And did you keep your word to yourself on what you said you would do? And if so, are you proud of yourself? Well, then you start stacking that, and that builds your confidence, because if you live for other people's praise, you'll die by their criticism.
Yeah. Yep.
And so understand, like, my role is, like, even just taking it back to being a dad, my role as a father, there is no place, just like the psalmist says, where can I go to flee from your presence? Where can I go to flee from your love? If I make my bed in the mountaintops, you're there. If I make it in the bed of hell, you're there. Like, I can't go anywhere. And the same is true for me as a dad. Like, there's nothing my son could ever do where I would lose love for him. So if he can build confidence for himself based on the standards that he sets,
especially now,
this is what I do.
Yeah.
So that's how we build confidence, not off of the attaboys and affirmation. Listen, you're talking to a recovering affirmation addict. And I was, because that's how I grew up. And I was I equated being loved with being useful.
Mm-hmm.
And so you continue saying yes until your yes has no more power. So one of the strongest ways that we build confidence is not in being able to say yes to things, because anyone can say yes to everything and give 50% effort, but your no, and understanding what those boundaries are and being able to stay strong to those boundaries. Talk to a lot of guys who have a lot of, like, struggle with drinking and other vices. And it's like, well, if I give you some heroin, you want to try it? No. Why? Well, because I don't do heroin. Right. Because you've taken on the identity that you're not a serious, like, drug addict. Fair. Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, let's just do the same with alcohol. Let's do the same with porn. Let's do the same with apathy. Let's do the same with laziness. Let's just not be that anymore.
Yeah.
Let's awesome. Just set a new standard.
Yeah.
And every day, you stack those micro wins. And that's where the confidence comes from.
Dude, it's huge. It's when you start to see it, like the momentum, like you just want more. You want to be you want more challenges to say, I want to challenge myself to continue to stack these wins to build this confidence, because it feels so good. It's so different. At least for me, it was so different, because I would just fall into some confidence here and there. But now you can, like you were saying with your son, you can produce it yourself, and you're not looking for those external things. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So jumping back a little bit.
Sure.
So you were in the church world, I believe at 19.
19. Yep.
19. So
yep. 40 now.
I know your journey's out there. If anybody hasn't listened to it, I know you've been on way more podcasts than this. But so I don't want to dive deep into that. But I do want to talk about like journey from church world to entrepreneurial world.
Yeah.
Kind of what was a catalyst for you to go there? And then also, what were some of the mind, like when you started, you know, it was just Cody Jefferson leaving church world, or leaving quote unquote normal to level up. It's like you said, you're in multiple businesses, you're on board, you're involved in a ton of things. What were some of the catalysts that got you to the next levels? And then what were some of those mind shifts that you had to make along that way?
Sure. Yeah. And my exit from occupational ministry wasn't an unhealthy one. It was one that I recognized that in order for me to say the things that I wanted to say and to be able to talk about some of the topics that I wanted to talk about, it just was not going to happen in a way that would be appropriate inside of the four walls, like behind a pulpit. So, but the pulpit was always preparation for the platform that God had planned. So I always want to honor my 13 years in the church pastorally, because it has shaped everything. And it created such a beautiful bridge into what I do now, because for 13 years, all I studied was, I mean, certainly theology, but also organizational leadership, how to build robust teams with volunteers. So now, like, that we can pay people, now we have, that's a whole new game. Understanding how to mitigate emotional experience when in being in front of people and leading, learning how to practice radical empathy along with maintaining a frame of certainty. Obviously learning how to communicate was massive. You know, in ministry, I was speaking 3 to 5 times a week for 13 years. So it's just a lot of reps.
Yeah.
And so the transition, I would tell you the biggest transition for me when I started, was really wrapping my head around a new identity, because for my entire adult life, I mean, that's really all I had ever done. And I had been involved in some business stuff outside of ministry, but I was known as a pastor and I was also known as a musician. And so to transition into the business world, more in a mentorship and kind of spiritual advisor role, and then moved more into marketing and branding, simply because I had done that for like the United Methodist Conference for 8 years, and rebranding for younger generation and cross-generational worship experiences. So recognizing that I had a knack in how to talk to people and how to influence people towards making decisions. Learning that in sales, like, I mean, I sold an intangible for 13 years. Like, I can sell anything that you need me to sell. Yeah. I sold, all respect, I believe, I sold not having sex to teenagers for a decade. Right, like, that'll season you. So it's, but the biggest, this shift was one, recognizing it was possible. And like, Jimmy, where I'm at today, 10 years later, this is why I don't do vision boards, because what I do now didn't exist. Like, you could not have told me in my wildest dreams that what I do now is what I would be doing. It didn't exist in my head. It wasn't even something I could conceptualize. So for me, it was saying yes to God in the moment and being diligent to what he had called me to. Also, it wasn't sexy. I didn't, like, man, that whole like 6 figures in 6 days, like, just skipped right over me. So I was flipping Harleys out of my garage. I've been a licensed mechanic for about 20 years, licensed barber for the same. So I was cutting hair out of my front room, just fading kids up after school. I was giving guitar lessons, piano lessons, vocal lessons. I was doing graphic design and web design for church communities while building the infrastructure of my business. So it taught me a great deal of discipline. Awesome. And again, it was the shift of, this is possible. I come from, and you can probably hear my voice, I come from rural Oklahoma. Like, what I do doesn't exist out here.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't. And I still live in Oklahoma. My family's here. There's not enough money in the world to take me away from my family. So, and our simple conservative ways. It was the shift that it's possible. And then once I believed it was possible, and I started to create a little bit of momentum, started getting, people really took an interest to my story. And so I started getting on a number of podcasts and sharing that story. And so now it moved from possible to probable. And I'll tell you that I had to overcome some fears. I was afraid of failing, really, because I was a single dad. I mean, I have a great co-parent, but it was just me, and I didn't want to let my son down. I just didn't want to fail again, because I already felt like I failed. I failed in the marriage. I felt like when I stepped out of ministry, like, I lost that identity too. And I'm like, I just don't want to let him down.
Yeah.
But then I had to flip, and then I had to get over the fear of it actually working and being successful, because I'd not seen it before. And the level, respectfully, the level of business and financial success that I've created at this point, nobody in my family has seen it. And it was a real struggle, because I didn't feel like, because my dad owns a feed store. My dad is like the hardest working man, even like now, like almost 70 years old. The dude works his rear off every day. And I didn't feel like I was worthy of making more than him, because he works harder than me. And here in Oklahoma, it's all about how hard you work.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to reshift my brain around the idea that I'm solving bigger problems, right? And so you know, helping companies in the scale process, going from 8 to 12 million to 25 to 40 million in 18 months, and then securing, you know, a 2.5 multiple exit. Like, those are the conversations I have on a daily basis now.
Yeah.
And those are big problems. And those require big solutions. And so I just recognize that, okay, well, maybe I can use my skill sets in a way that is honoring. And the money's just a byproduct, but the money doesn't mean that I think that I'm better than anyone else. It's just another measuring stick.
Right.
It's just another measure of effectiveness. And so I had to retool that. I had to reconfigure what it was to not only have enough, but to have more than enough. Because when I was a guy, I mean, I grew up in a single bedroom trailer.
Yeah.
And my dad, amazing, amazing man, worked himself silly to give us everything that we needed. And we didn't have as much as everybody else, but we always had what we needed. And, but it was always real tight, like real tight. And what do you do when it's not tight anymore? Mm-hmm. And what do you do when all you're used to is that kind of fight and friction? So, you know, one of the things that it taught me over the course of these years is that even when I didn't have anything, even in that single bedroom trailer with my dad was a true single parent. And with the love of my grandparents who helped to raise me because he worked so much. Throughout ministry, making $26,000 to $30,000 a year for 13 years. And I always made, like, God always provided. And so what I recognized, like, it was never about the money, because I've been wealthy my whole life.
Mm.
And so now I don't fight for anything. I just operate from a place of victory that I already know God's got it. So my responsibility is to say yes, to be diligent, to be responsible, and to be a good steward to what's been placed in front of me. And that's just been the journey.
Yeah.
And again, I couldn't have told you it would end up here. I have no idea what 10 years will look like from now. I was just mm-hmm. talking to my wife about this the other day. I think it was last Friday. We were talking because my social media has just kind of gotten crazy. And I was like, can you imagine, like, this is just, like, in a month, I went from reaching like 20,000 people to, like, we reached 2.5 million people this month.
Yeah. I've grown 30,000. My daughter's one of those followers now.
Who is?
My daughter.
Oh, that's awesome.
She's 16.
How amazing is that?
Yeah.
You know, and to see, like, and so I tell her, I'm like, could you imagine what God will do in a year if I'm just consistent? And she's like, whatever it is, it's going to be big. She said, imagine what happens 10 years from now. And I'm like, I can't. She's like, I can't either. And yeah. She said, that's, I think, the beauty of the season that we're in. So I'd also say, like, my wife is my greatest advocate. And I would not be where I am. She pulls out the very best of me.
Awesome.
And there are days, just like we all have them, where you just don't feel it, and you're wrestling with your own inconsistencies, and you're wrestling with doubts in your head, because they always come.
Mm-hmm.
And her belief in me and her quiet response of faith and being able to see so much inside of me is outside of my son, the greatest gift that God has given me.
It's awesome.
So,
yeah, behind every great man, there's a great woman.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
And yeah, we carry a lot, especially, you know, in these entrepreneurial roles and working with teams and, you know, yeah, companies and things like that, that a lot of people don't understand, but our wives, you know, they, I know my wife has some broad shoulders to carry,
yeah,
a lot of weight for me, more than,
well, because it's insane being married to guys like us.
Yeah.
Because you never shut it off. You're always going. You always have ideas.
Yeah.
You've always got this larger than life dream. Yep. And you're crazy enough to execute on it and try to pull it off all the time.
Yep.
And it's manic at times. It's highs. It's lows. It's every human emotion in existence.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a special kind of woman to be married to.
Yeah.
Like us.
It's true, man.
And like we push our bodies physically, like we're just always pushing everything.
Yeah. Yep.
And it doesn't make sense to most people.
Yeah.
And no,
but can you imagine not doing it? Like now no. that you're in it, I can't imagine not doing it.
No.
I had this conversation with a buddy the other day and he said, you know, God created and he set us out to create. And it's like, I never really thought about it that way, but I feel like, God, he spoke everything into existence. It's this world is amazing. Like everything in it. But then we're set out and in our heads, we create this business idea, this venture over here, to grow this thing this way. And we go out and we do it. I mean, sometimes we fail, but we have the ability to go out and try and create those things. And it's just a cool, but I can't imagine not doing it now.
No, it's all such a gift. And to even see how it influences my son and my stepson and how it shifts their perspective and their reality. And like, even to hear like that your 16-year-old daughter now follows me, like what an absolute gift to be able to be a real human being with a real life and real struggles and real opportunity. And you're doing the best. Like, it's like David when he goes up against Goliath and he's like, I got these 5 stones. I've got what's in my hand and it's enough. And you consistently push forward. I couldn't imagine dropping the stones and walking away.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way.
Yeah.
But so I also think that's why we find more resolve and purpose, because, you know, it's been said that a man without purpose is a ship without a rudder.
Mm.
And the fact that it can be overwhelming. Yes, it can be manic for sure. Yes, it's stressful, but we chose it. But a man has like a few primary roles, like biologically, spiritually, right? Like one is to protect, two is to provide, and three is to pioneer, which is mean to go out and to carve a new path. And, you know, it's also been said that people can always find purpose when there's a strong, compelling vision for the future. And I think for so many men and women, for that matter, we've lost what it is to see what a future could look like, because the social climate so much right now is so murky.
Yeah.
And there's so much propaganda and there's so much unknown and there's so much imaginary sides being taken of fighting battles that literally have zero eternal consequence, because we're all just really bored because life is too good.
Yeah.
We're not fighting for anything or building anything. And I think for us, why entrepreneurship or going out and venturing into doing things is so important in life-giving is because it does give man an opportunity to pioneer, which is what we're called to do.
Mm.
We're called to name the animals. We were called to have dominion.
Yeah.
And you can't do that being an armchair quarterback.
Yep. I love it. And that actually was going to hit you. You already touched on my last question, or second to last question is why do you think people seem to lack purpose, or I guess maybe not just so general in that people lack purpose, but like for the person listening right now, who's like, you know what? I don't really like my job. These guys are talking crazy. I've never built a business maybe, or anything like that, but there's something more, like there's something in them that they know they there's more to life. They want more in life.
Yeah.
Maybe they believe in God. Maybe they don't, but, what would be a something that would get them to move, or some kind of maybe a nugget or advice you think could push, you know, they talk about the dog that's sleeping on the nail. And the guy walks up and he's like, why is that dog laying on the nail? And he's like, well, it doesn't hurt enough to get up. Like, what do you think? What are some things that you think could push people to get off the armchair quarterback couch and move?
So if I'm being 100% with you and not giving you like a really cookie cutter podcast answer,
yep,
there isn't much. When people are committed to their ways, it's again, I'm just a walking fortune cookie, but it's said that like the pain of staying where you are, like has to be so strong that it inspires you to move, right? Like the pain of inaction is greater than the pain of staying. So we have to manufacture that in some way, shape or form. And we have to be able to create that sense of urgency. For me, it really is just the fact that I've lost too many people in my life. And if you're interested in that, like go find 100 interviews on it. But knowing that life is so fragile and finite, also recognizing that I don't want to lie to my son.
Yeah.
That I can't tell him, hey man, whatever you want to do in this life, it is possible for you. And it's just going to take the right environment and the right mindset. And it's going to take the right people. It's going to take the right tools. And it's going to be seasoned over time. And it's never going to happen as fast as you think. And you're going to hit some speed bumps along the way. But it's possible. And whatever your dreams are, whatever God places in your heart, whatever you feel that stirring, chase after it. I don't want him to look at me and be like, well, then why didn't you?
Bam.
So for me, that is the urgency. Like I have a responsibility to live out what I'm trying to teach them. And I have a responsibility to the gifts and talents. Again, I'm a man of faith that God has given me. In Matthew, it talks about the parable of the man with talents and how they're taken away and given to someone else if you're not responsible for them. I don't want what I take for granted because I've normalized my skills and my charisma and my acumen and my desire to learn and my desire to be with people and to sit with people and to love people. I don't want to lose that. So I want to be responsible. And so for me, that's it enough. You know, in Ecclesiastes, Kohelet, the wisdom writer, talks about seasons. There's a season for everything.
Yeah.
And if you find yourself in the midst of a season of not really sure what's next, but feeling like there might be something, that there's a stirring, whether you believe in God or not, let's suspend that disbelief and let's pray a prayer that, hey, God, if you are real, right? Let's just, because if he's not, you're not losing anything anyway. You're just talking to yourself, which you do all the time anyway. But it's just find a quiet place. We are a world that is consistently distracted and consistently consumed with noise and with media, scrolling mindlessly. We are people that are alone together. We are people that are desperate to be known, but we settle for being seen. If you can find quiet and you can get okay with being quiet with yourself and just take a piece, just take a pad of paper and a pen and go find a quiet place and go every day. And the expectation is, God, if you're there, I'm listening. Go. Yeah. Can't promise you it'll happen day one. Can't promise you it'll happen day 20. But I can promise you that your faithfulness will be rewarded and that you will find the clarity that you're after. Now, you might not have all the tools and the resources and the skill sets, but now we have a starting point. Yeah. And now we know, based on this starting point and who I'm called to become inside of this vision that's been given to me, I can start to map out the next one, two, or three steps. And maybe the one, two, or three people that I need to be intentional to connect with, because I believe that they can help me transcend into this next season of life. But it's going to take getting quiet and it's going to take listening. We're all really good at talking.
Yeah.
It's going to take being good at listening and being quiet.
Yeah. It's a scary place to be, man. Even as a believer for me, like it's to be quiet. I mean, I got some ADHD too, but,
I got 12 squirrels in my head, you know what I mean? All doing Adderall at any given time of the day. I'm just trying to get them all to sit at the same table.
I would add, that was a great answer too. Cause I agree with you. Like there's nothing, you know, it takes some inner stirring for somebody to move. Yes. Like, and so I love that it's fortune cookie. Maybe it's not some really super pithy, sexy, like, oh, you just got to do these three moves and it'll
life doesn't happen in three steps. Yeah. I'm sorry. Like I can't give you a 60 second, three step reel on how to find your purpose because you don't find it. Your purpose is not something you find.
Right.
Sorry. Yeah. the modern church and personal development lied to you. They yeah. sold you a bill of goods and a lot of books and a lot of courses, but purpose is created every single day. When you decide who it is that you're called to be and you live that out every single day, that is your purpose. My purpose isn't being a dad and being a husband and being a follower of Jesus and being a business leader and being a CEO and being a COO and being a communicator and being a wrestling coach. It's in everything that I do. Everything. It's in being kind to strangers when I go grocery shopping.
Yeah.
Purpose is in all things. So it's very, very also, it's also very important to be very mindful of like what you're allowing into your life and what you're putting into your life from, you know, a media standpoint, from a music standpoint, because it all matters and it all influences whether you think it does or doesn't.
Right along with that, I mean, you spoke to it, you know, you've experienced more loss than I've experienced in my life. But one thing that I've learned that you probably know, you do know more well than I do, is like I'll be 42 this year. And for me, you know, all that you just said, but also time, like every day it's getting shorter.
And that's what I'm saying,
I have this weird, like, isn't it crazy? Obsession with like time is just, I mean, my daughter's 16. My kids were, you know, it's just like boom, boom, boom. And it's like, I have so much I want to do. And so much to accomplish. I feel like time's just like going through your hand, like sand.
Yeah. So, and that's where that intention, that's where that urgency and intentionality comes from, right? Like, it's my belief that, you know, we can call procrastination like a coping mechanism or a stress, you know, relief mechanism. I think it's arrogance. It is an arrogant assumption that God's going to give you another day to do what he's called you to do today. And there's no way. Like, this is why we do the little simple things that we do inside of the mastermind. Like, hey, like, make sure you're doing your weekly date nights. Hey, like, don't let anything go unsaid on a daily basis. Like, there's not a day that I don't tell my son I love him. There's not a day that I don't tell my wife I love her that I'm grateful for. There's not a week in this house that we don't have fresh flowers. There's not a day that she doesn't have a fresh note on her mirror with a dry erase marker. Like, there's, and some of this isn't even for the person in general. It's because this is the standard of our home.
Yeah.
And I'm raising men. And so, boys, this is who we are. This is what we do.
Yeah.
And every day is urgent because God didn't promise tomorrow. We have the gift of today. That's it. So if I have an able body, I'm going to train it. I'm going to feed it well. I'm going to get adequate sleep. And I'm going to do all the things that I can to minimize the stress in my life because it's all going back to the dirt anyway.
Yep.
Amen, and man. What does it profit a man to gain the world and sell his soul in the process?
Yeah. Nope. It's being a good steward of what we got, our time, our talents, and our health. So I feel like that was like the grand finale of this thing.
There we go.
No, that was awesome, man. There are tons of gold in there. And, I just want to say, I love what you're doing. You know, the example you are on social media. I know social media it's a blessing and a curse.
Sure.
But if you're going to be on there, like, I love the things that you're doing, that there is there's a sense of peace and a sense of real, authentic, and also you don't shy away from the faith side, which I know a lot of people do, or they, you know, and I'm guilty of it myself sometimes. Like, you just don't know if you want to go, or you stay safe by not going there. And so it's refreshing to see other men in this world, in this industry, putting their faith out there by and also just talking, just being real about family and everything else. So so I appreciate that about you. I appreciate the group. Again, I'm plugging it again. Not Cody didn't ask me to. Even if you don't get in this group, if you're a man out there, if you're looking for a change in your life or to level up, a lot of things Cody and I have just talked about, like, find a group of men that you can, trust, that you like, and that you can, that can build into you, speak into your life and help build you up. Cause that's the only thing that's going to get you there. You can't go it alone.
No, iron sharpens iron.
Yeah. Amen. So Cody, yeah, I appreciate your time, man.
Absolutely.
Again, appreciate everything you're doing, the example you're setting, and what God's been doing in your life. I pray he continues to bless it.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Appreciate All right, that. Man. Same appreciate to you. It. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good.